Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Five Bytes Podcast. I'm your host, Rory Monahan. Coming up on this week's episode, Microsoft have announced Office LTSC version 2024. Also, researchers have published a study on security concerns around poorly configured Microsoft Configuration Manager instances. And Dell has dealt a blow against its remote and hybrid workers. For this and more, keep listening to this episode of the podcast, which of course, as always, is brought to you by my sponsors, and that includes Netrix Policy Pack, where you use Group Policy, Policy Pack Cloud, or MDM to remove local admin rights, manage and lock down applications, Java, browsers, and mitigated ransomware, plus more. And also brought to you by Numescent, the inventors of the first and only cloud-native container management platform for Windows desktops. And of course, also brought to you by ControlUp, end-to-end digital experience management for the work from anywhere era. ControlUp, happy users, happy IT. If you enjoy the show each week, you have these awesome sponsors to thank. And now for some news. Security researchers have created a knowledge-based repository called Misconfiguration Manager for attack and defense techniques based on improperly setting up Microsoft's Configuration Manager, which could allow an attacker to execute payloads or take over a domain controller. SpectreOps researchers Chris Thompson and Dwayne Michael have reported that Microsoft Configuration Manager, previously known as SCCM, is not easy to set up, and that many of the default configurations leave room for attackers to take advantage. In a blog post, Michael illustrated that the most common and damaging misconfiguration researchers see in their engagements are network access accounts with too many privileges. In another example, Michael says that Configuration Manager sites could enroll domain controllers as clients, which introduces the risk of remote code execution if the site hierarchy is not properly set up. And yeah, I would add my own two cents to that. There are so many different service accounts required in a Configuration Manager environment that some organizations are inclined to take shortcuts because getting the correct accounts with the correct permissions in place seems like too much work to them. And yet, some environments I've worked in, servers and desktops would be patched using Configuration Manager, but with domain controllers, you would want to not have any agents, if possible, on those other than just security agents. So definitely some room for improvement in sites that I've been witness to in my career. So if you work with Configuration Manager, this is an article that you want to check out, and the repository is very useful. In a recent blog post, the CEO of Broadcom, Hock Tan, noted that Broadcom spent 18 months evaluating and buying VMware. He said that while there is still a lot of work to do, the company has made substantial progress. He wrote, quote, "Of course, we recognize that this level of change has understandably created some unease among our customers and partners. But all of these moves have been with the goals of innovating faster, meeting our customers' needs more effectively, and making it easier to do business with us." Tan believes that the changes will ultimately provide greater profitability and improved market opportunities for channel partners. However, many IT solution provider businesses that were working with VMware have already been disrupted. And I know that's certainly the case for some of my friends who are partners or previous partners of VMware before the acquisition. It has not gone down that well with many. It's interesting because a few weeks ago, a different person at the organization publicly addressed unease amongst customers, and now the CEO is addressing it too. So I would bet that's an indication that there's a real sense of unsettlement, if that's a word, or unease from customers and partners. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out over the next couple of years. LibbyComputer.com reports Microsoft will soon provide a single Teams Windows and macOS app for all account types, allowing users to switch between work, school, or personal profiles with just a couple of clicks. It's about damn time, really. The company says the new unified Teams application will be made available to commercial customers beginning in April, and it will be through a regular update process. While the current unified preview app experience is called Microsoft Teams with work or school in parentheses, Microsoft will switch to just a Microsoft Teams name in an upcoming update. So that's good too, because it's so confusing. So one app, one Microsoft Teams name, none of this BS that we're currently dealing with. So that's going to be good. Now, if only the Teams app itself could improve. Microsoft have announced that Office LTSC 2024 will enter a commercial preview phase starting next month and will be generally available later this year. The company will also release Office 2024 later this year too, which is a new version of the on-premises Office for consumers, which comes with 5 years of support and the traditional one-time purchase model, which I don't know how many customers are still on that. I would think the cloud-averse ones are, but that's becoming less and less. I think most have moved to Office 365 by now. But if you have not, then this is relevant to you. Fujitsu have confirmed the presence of malware on several of their company work computers, and as a result of an internal investigation, it was discovered that files containing personal information and customer information may have been illegally taken out. According to Ars Technica, Fujitsu have said they are currently investigating, and they have reported the incident to Japan's Data Protection Authority and have issued an apology for the inconvenience to customers. BleepyComputer.com had a great write-up on a ransomware called StopCrypt, which is believed to be the most widely distributed ransomware in the world. It is just one that doesn't seem to get much press, though, because the target is not large enterprises, but rather individuals on the consumer side. The write-up includes details of the payload, the fact it creates a scheduled task in Windows and runs every 5 minutes, it encrypts and leaves a text file in each directory, and more. I mean, some of them are just like the telltale signs of pretty much any form of ransomware. But the worrying fact is, researchers believe that it is currently becoming even harder to detect as it's evading security tools, and this article suggests any updates to this ransomware is noteworthy just due to how widespread it is. So while it may not be affecting large enterprises, it is affecting people on the consumer side, and if you're supporting remote workers or people on their own devices, this is still relevant to you. And hey, if you have your own personal computer, it's relevant as well. McDonald's had a big whoopsie last week when a troublesome change made by a third-party firm led to many restaurants all around the world closing as their point-of-sale systems failed. Stores reported being unable to take orders, open their registers, or process payments, with some opting to go back to just using pen and paper, and with many others just temporarily closing while the issue was ongoing. McDonald's denied that it had a cybersecurity incident and stated they identified the issue and quickly moved to resolve it. While the all-clear was given relatively soon after it became a news story, many locations were still encountering issues after the all-clear was given. I would not want to be working for the firm who pushed that change. It is reported the issue started around midnight CDT time, which I believe is the time zone of McDonald's headquarters from what I remember of the movie. I think it was Chicago-based, so I guess they scheduled it for midnight where their headquarters was, but of course, it being a global franchise, it affected a lot of the restaurants right in the middle of their day, including at their peak lunchtime hour. 13 countries across Africa experienced internet outages last week due to damages to submarine fiber optic cables. Cloudflare's radar tool, which monitors internet usage patterns, detailed how the outage seemingly moved from the northern part of West Africa to South Africa. All 13 countries, which includes Benin, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Ivory Coast, Ghana, Guinea, Liberia, Namibia, Niger, Nigeria, South Africa, The Gambia, and Togo, reportedly suffered nationwide outages, with most seeing multiple networks hit. Some countries' internet disruptions were short-lived, such as Gambia and Guinea, as they lasted for only about 30 minutes per Cloudflare. Other outages, like in South Africa, took much longer, with South Africa's lasting about 5 hours, and some remained ongoing at the time that I scripted this episode of the podcast. In an Azure status report, Microsoft said it determined that multiple cables on the West African coast, including Africa Coast to Europe, Main 1, SAT-3, and West Africa cable system, were disrupted. And I'll share a link to the article that contains a map of where the cables were damaged, if you'd be interested in seeing that. And that's at 5bytespodcast.com under this episode, which is episode 326. Microsoft has announced that RSA keys shorter than 2048 bits will soon be deprecated in Windows Transport Layer Security, or TLS, to provide increased security. According to BleepComputer.com, while Microsoft has not specified precisely when the deprecation will begin, it will likely involve a formal announcement followed by a grace period. This was the case for the deprecation of keys under the 1024 bits in 2012. During this grace period, Windows administrators can configure logging to determine what devices are attempting to connect using older keys and will be impacted by the change. And to minimize problems, Microsoft has decided to limit the scope of impact so as not to affect TLS certificates issued by enterprise or test certification authorities. However, Microsoft does strongly recommend that organizations transition RSA keys of 2048 bits as soon as possible as part of the following best security practices. Bloomberg and Ars Technica have reported that Apple are in talks to license Google's Gemini model to power AI features like Siri in a future iPhone software update coming later in 2024. Reportedly, Apple have also been holding similar talks with OpenAI. Apple has also been developing their own AI models, including a large language model codenamed Ajax, which for some reason when I see that I want to say Ajax like the soccer team, but Ajax, and a basic chatbot called Apple GPT. However, the company's LLM technology is said to lag behind that of its competitors, making a partnership with Google or another AI provider a more attractive option. Bloomberg reports that the potential partnership between Apple and Google is likely to draw scrutiny from regulators, however, as the company's current search deal is already the subject of a lawsuit by the U.S. Department of Justice, which is something I covered on a previous episode of this podcast. Starting in May, Dell employees who are fully remote will no longer be eligible for promotion, according to the Business Insider. Dell employees will mostly all be considered remote or hybrid starting in May, and Business Insider reported that hybrid workers have to come into the office at least 39 days per quarter. So if you're hybrid, that means you're coming into the office at least 39 days over a 3-month stretch, and it means you will be eligible for promotion. But if you opt to continue to work remote, you will not be considered for promotion. So while this seems maybe like dangling the carrot for people to go back to hybrid, I would think personally that this is also a worrying sign for hybrid, because once you've gone back to hybrid, the goalpost's probably going to be moved and it's going to be, well, hey, anyone who wants to be promoted has to be in the office full-time. But of course, this could also be another example of that kind of stealth indirect layoff, right? Because they know that employees prefer to work remotely. They know that there's some employers out there who are still willing to support their employees to work remotely. So they'll say, hey, you don't like this? Go find another job somewhere else where they'll let you work remotely. And then we don't have to worry about laying people off again. Unfortunately, the remote working house of cards is tumbling at an increasing rate. So bad news for anyone who has not got a ticket to EUC Unplugged yet and wants to go, it's now sold out. So anyone who happens to be going to the event, I hope to see you there. I just booked my tickets and I'll see you there in April. And now for this episode, Scripts, Tricks, and Tips. So I'm going to keep it short this week, give my voice a bit of a rest because I've still got a lingering cough and it's difficult to record these episodes at the moment. But of course, Guy Leach, who else, shared a better way of presenting data using PowerShell that allows you to see the most frequent events in a particular event log. So the podcast last year, I shared a tip on using PowerShell to get event logs and being able to filter by like date, time, event ID and so forth. And I think I even had it highlighted in the Scripts, Tricks, and Tips of the Year on the New Year episode as well. But Guy has shared an example of a commandlet that goes through and shows how to present the data to help you see those most frequent events in the particular event log. So if you do that a lot, which when I was doing day-to-day IT admin work, I would do quite frequently, this is going to be one for you. Well, that's it for this episode of the podcast. As always, thank you so much for listening.